Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to spend some time now talking about Bo Bergdahl and his situation. Just a bit of an overall insight. And I'm not an expert on military jurisprudence, but as I understand it, going AWOL is not applicable to Bo Bergdahl. If you are in the United States, for example, and you've signed up to play military, to play Army, and you in the process decide, you know, the sexual harassment is too rampant, too much hypocrisy here. I'm not buying into the indoctrination. I think this is all a pack of lies. If you've signed up for the military and you've had a vow of conscience like that, then, and you say, I don't want to play anymore, they're not going to let you out. And so if you don't want to be deployed and compelled to do something that you know is inappropriate, then what happens, and as I understand it, it happens thousands of times every year, that recruits simply leave their bases. And that's called going AWOL. When they do, they have to also leave the country. Some will go to Canada. Some will go down to Central and South America. But you have to leave the country because if you're found and you say that, you know, now that you know what the job is really like, you don't want to be part of the job, you can't just leave. They won't let you leave. And so if they track you down and find you, you're going to spend a year in prison for going AWOL, and then you'll be dishonorably discharged. Very hard to get a job once you've been dishonorably discharged, and it's tough to get a job after you spent a year in prison. And you're going to lose a year of your life to them. Now, can you imagine a business that says that, you know, once you join our business, if we have fed you a bunch of smoke and lies and a bunch of, you know, sweet-tasting candy, and you get in and say, oh, boy, this is really about death and destruction and deception, and no, I don't want to be part of this. And the business says, but you can't leave. We own your soul. What kind of an outcry there would be. But that's the U.S. military. And the sites that I have read say that there are many thousands, if not tens of thousands, of recruits that come to this conclusion every year, and they go AWOL. That's not what happened with Bo Bergdahl. He's a deserter. When you're deployed in a overseas environment, particularly if you are assigned a duty, and you say that because of the danger of the duty, because of the moral inappropriateness of that duty, that you do not wish to comply with that duty, and you fail to do as you were ordered to do, then that's desertion. And with desertion, you're going to spend a decade or more in prison. So that's what Bo Bergdahl is facing, a decade or more in prison. Now, let's talk about his confinement overseas. U.S. Former, so I guess he's still a soldier, U.S. Soldier Bo Bergdahl. This is what is written about him. Most periodicals have the same evidence. Developed a love for Afghan green tea. He taught his captors badminton. He even celebrated Christmas and Easter with the hardline Islamists, according to the Pakistani militant commander. So the Pakistanis are providing the American media with a view of Bo Bergdahl's time with them. Now, if he's celebrating Christmas and Easter, he was not a deserter. In the sense of someone who was going to the other team. There is no chance that he left the U.S. Army because he wanted to be part of the Taliban. You don't join the Taliban and celebrate Christmas and Easter. Sorry, folks. So there is no chance that he is someone who decided that he was going to become an enemy of the United States. He just simply wanted out. He wanted away from the U.S. Army. Bergdahl, the only U.S. prisoner of war in Afghanistan. It's amazing, too, that they continue to use this terminology. He was not a prisoner of war. He wasn't even a prisoner. I mean, he was kidnapped, and he was held as a hostage. He is a hostage, not a prisoner, and he was not in a war zone. We have not declared war against the Taliban. We have not declared war against Afghanistan. Well, he was released on Saturday in exchange for freeing five senior Taliban figures held in Guantanamo Bay in a dramatic deal brokered by Qatar. Now, that is true. That is where the deal was brokered, and was brokered there because the emir of Qatar is a fundamentalist Muslim. He is the primary gun runner in the world to fundamentalist Muslims. The guns that were used to kill 200 or more people in Nigeria today are the same guns that were used to kidnap those 200-plus girls from their school. And those are the same guns that Qatar supplied to Libya so that the Mujahideen in Libya could overthrow Muammar Gaddafi. Qatar is the primary gun runner into Syria. Most of American weapons that are deployed in Syria are fed into Syria through Qatar. So they are the principal entity in the world for providing American weapons to jihadists, both in Libya and throughout northern and central Africa and throughout the Middle East, particularly in Syria. So that's who Qatar is. They also have the largest U.S. naval base in the Middle East. The Army sergeant's almost 5 years in captivity saw him transferred between various militant factions along the volatile Afghan-Pakistan border, finally ending up in Pakistan's North Waziristan tribal district, according to the militant sources. So, it wasn't just a guest of the Haqqani Network. He was passed between all of them. Why was he passed between all of them? Because there is no distinction between them. The distinctions are American. This idea that there is a distinction between Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and the Haqqani Network is an American distinction. It does not exist in reality. They're all one and the same. They're just all fundamentalist Muslims. Quote, he was fond of kahwa, Afghan green tea, and he drank a lot of kahwa all day, which he mostly prepared himself, the commander told the AFP by phone from an undisclosed location in Pakistan's tribal areas. Over time, Bergdahl, now 28, grew fluent in Pashto and Dari, he said. Those are local languages. Like the militants, who were mainly ethnic Pashtuns, known for their voracious appetite for meat, Bergdahl liked vegetables, and he asked for meat only once or twice a week, the commander said. Oh, we served him what he liked. You know, it tells me that the difference here. My wife told me a story yesterday of a friend of a very good family friend. And this individual happened to be a hunter, a good old boy in the South, and with his friends was on a went to Mexico to go hunting. And on the way into Mexico, evidently this individual got bad advice on the forms to fill out for his shotgun, you know, because he was going bird hunting. And the Mexican government accused him of being a terrorist, took his passport, and locked him in prison and kept him in prison for 5 weeks. They put him in a cell with that was 3 feet by 7 feet with four Mexican murderers. He was beaten up every night. They withheld food, and so one of his friends had to bribe the prison officials just to get access to him to feed him. I mean, that's Mexico. That's how a prisoner who did nothing wrong, who has finally been released because of the work of Bob Goodall, U.S. congressman, has finally been released. But that's how he was treated in a Mexico prison when he wasn't charged with nor convicted of any crime. That's not what happened with old Bo Bergdahl. He had whatever he wanted to eat. He was well fed. They gave him what he liked. While the militants attempted to teach the soldier about Islam and provided him with religious books, he preferred more earthly pursuits. Yeah, they were trying to say, hey, man, our religion is great. Yeah, look at this. We can grow drugs. No problem. We can rape women. God gives us a pass. We can go off and kill in the name of our God, and our God just loves it when we do that kind of stuff. And here we are. We kidnapped you, and that's part of our religion. Don't you love a religion that allows us to kidnap you? Maybe you should join our religion. He would spend more time playing badminton or helping with the cooking, the militant chief said. Helping with the cooking. Doesn't sound like he was much of a prisoner, does it? He loved badminton and always played badminton with his handlers. In fact, he taught many of the fighters about the game. They would say jihadists. And the Idaho native made a point of celebrating Christian festivals when he was that he was accustomed to back home, even inviting his captors to participate. He never missed his religious festivals. He used to tell his handlers that they were coming up weeks before Christmas and Easter and celebrated it with them. He said, boy, you got one religious buffoon talking about another religious buffoon. A security analyst, Imtiaz Gul, said that the militants would have regarded Bergdahl as a high-value asset, and harming him would have had a negative impact on their propaganda efforts. Oh, good grief. They weren't holding him or treating him well for propaganda purposes? Good grief. They were holding him as leverage for something that they wanted, and knowing that if they kept him alive, they could trade him for something. Like they did. Wasn't for propaganda? You moron. They got exactly what they expected from him. They traded him. Yeah, they had to keep him alive to do that. But they treated him quite nicely. Yes, the expert into the nature of the Taliban and other fundamentalist Islamic groups said, and I quote, these groups usually treat hostages that way. End quote. Gee. And my lying eyes, all of those videos with these fundamentalist groups in front of Islamic symbols while reading the Quran, sawing off slowly their hostages' heads as they gagged on their own blood, time after time. Why don't you tell that to Danny Pearl's wife about how that's how they usually treat their hostages? Why don't you tell that to the family of the two priests here recently in Syria that were brought before the entire village of Muslims as the Muslims read from the Quran and had little boys participate in slowly sawing off their heads? Yeah, that's the way they usually treat hostages, isn't it? We have Glenn on the line. I'm breathless at the ignorance and stupidity of the experts and the willingness of journalists to write down what they say without saying, oh, but what about? But what about?
You know, I'm tired of hearing these, you know, atrocity, you know, prisoner stories and that disgusting narco-terrorist. We ought to just fully invade and take it over. I speak of Mexico, of course.
Well, no, you've misstated the purpose there. The purpose is for the Mexicans to fully invade America and to take it over. You're going the wrong direction with all. You got to get with the program.
No. I'm sorry. A few decades too late. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, you know, there are now about 100 million Mexicans living in the United States. They're, what, about 40 to 45% of the U.S. Population. My guess is there aren't 100 million Americans living in Mexico.
Right. And if you're Guatemalan, don't stray over that border because you will not be treated as well as Bill Bergdahl was.
Well, it's for darn sure that you don't want to be a prisoner in a Mexican prison because you have absolutely no rights. You can imagine that poor guy. I mean, he went there on a hunting trip, and he spent 5 weeks in a 3-foot by 7-foot cell with four murderers. Sharing it with four murderers. And he didn't even speak Spanish. Couldn't even talk to him.
Yeah.
Beaten every night. Yeah, wow. Never fed.
Yeah, I made my way across the Rio Grande on foot, you know, a couple times from the bridge from Laredo to Nuevo Laredo. And the difference was like night and day. I don't care if I ever see the other side of that border again.
You know, I've been in most countries around the world. I've spent a fair amount of time in Mexico, and there are parts of Mexico that I really happen to like that I think are stunningly beautiful, particularly Baja California. But the fact is that your life isn't worth a plug nickel in Mexico anymore. You're taking great risk to go there. But that's really neither here nor there in the story.
As the Bergdahl. They were actually very wise and consistent over a long period of time in terms of how they treated him so that they could cash in later on, both in terms of his value as an asset and in terms of the account he would give when he returned. We were not wise enough to behave accordingly towards our prisoners at Camp X-Ray when we waterboard them and electrocute and cut their genitals.
Yeah,
that's why we can't let them go, even though the military tribunals have ruled that so many are just poor dupes who were sold out for the award. And now we've tortured them, and we can't let them go because they'll tell the truth about what was done to them.
Yeah, that man that was captured, I believe it was in Macedonia, where the CIA mistook him for someone else. And they stripped him naked, and they used a broomstick up his, routinely sodomizing him and torturing him week after week. And when they finally realized that he was the wrong guy, we dropped him off by the side of the road. He found that European courts were open to hear his testimony, and his testimony was excruciatingly painful for America. You know, most Americans are unaware of this story, and they don't care what their CIA does or how savage we are. But I'll tell you what, there isn't anybody in Europe who hasn't heard of that story and isn't repulsed by it. Now, I personally think that it will be a cold day in hell for Bo Bergdahl to have audience with the media. You know, they haven't let him speak yet. And you know, what are they going to do? So they bring him back to the United States. They can't just let him go. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Mess. Yes, this is the problem of releasing Bergdahl to the media. Let's consider what we know. That immediately after Bergdahl's capture, this was in June of 2009, less than a month from the time that he was captured, there's a video of him. And he begins by saying, I was captured outside of the base camp. Well, that was true. I was captured outside of the base camp. That's true. I was behind a patrol. Well, that's not true. He said, I was lagging behind the patrol, and I was captured. Well, that's absolutely not true. We know that he was assigned to be on guard duty, and he had dropped his weapon and walked out of the camp. So that's not true. He said all this in a video, saying that he was distraught when discussing his family. The militant sources, the Taliban, says that they found him outside and that he was drunker than a skunk. I said he was just drunk out of his mind. He was then taken off to various places in the coast of province of Afghanistan. But then when Sangin, who was his principal handler, was killed by a U.S. drone strike in September of 2013, they moved him into Pakistan, where he was kept thereafter. Now, following his capture, Bergdahl went on to appear in several more videos. In each of them, he took a hostile line against the U.S. war effort. So, how is it now that they're, under those circumstances, they're going to release this guy from the military hospital slash prison that he's in and say, yeah, go tell your story to the American people. They'll be so pleased that we traded, not only exchanged 5 Taliban officers for you, but so pleased that we made every American now more vulnerable to being kidnapped and held as a hostage to trade for future Islamic militants. How is that going to work out? How is this story ever going to go away for Barack Obama?
Well, you know, the other aspect I don't understand is his health. Did he, you know, they were told that his health was in jeopardy and that, you know, they make it sound like he barely staggered in and that they took him to Landstuhl and put him on IVs or something, like he was dehydrated. This guy's you don't play badminton and help with the cooking if you're, you know, if you're all weak and sick. Has he been taken sick, or are they just, is this all about debriefing? They're debriefing and interviewing him and stuff like that.
No, this is all a part. The Obama administration recognizes now that they made a horrendous mistake. And so they're now trying to come up with justifications to justify the asinine. And so now it's our compassion over his failing health. He did not have failing.
He's really picking him off at Landstuhl complaining about the orange and black Pico.
Yeah, really. I mean, because it's not his brand of tea.
It's not kawa.
Right, yeah, and he wants to go work in the hospital kitchen so that he can fry up some little stir-fry, vegetable stir-fry, I guess. The Taliban released pictures of him. He wasn't being propped up. He didn't have any issues. He didn't even look gaunt. This whole thing is nothing but an excuse. What the Obama administration wanted the opportunity to negotiate with the Taliban because they want to negotiate peace with honor, and peace with honor is withdrawing from Afghanistan with the Taliban promising they won't engage in international terrorism. Not that they have ever been involved in international terrorism. That's what they want. The Taliban didn't want to negotiate with them. The Taliban wants Americans to stay in Afghanistan because they are committed to jihad, and it gives them jihad targets. And so this administration...
Just to blowing things up so that they don't get to, the day they go to pull out, they'll shoot up a C-130 or something, you know, and then, oh, whoops.
Yeah, I know. It's
Obama gets another perk from this because it gave him a chance to autonomously flex his imperial executive muscles apart from Congress again. Just another act, you know, of I've got a phone in a pen, and how would you? I'm going to do what I want.
However, in this particular case, this stain isn't going away. Now what do you do with Bergdahl? I mean, this story only gets worse from here. What Obama did failed. The Taliban doesn't want to negotiate. And the goal that the Obama administration has regarding a negotiation is asinine. And so the more that is known, the more that is said, the worse he looks.
I think he's in greater danger. And plus, if this blows up in Obama's face, Congress gets to rub his nose. The right wing of the Congress gets to rub his nose.
Of course.
But Bergdahl's in greater danger now than he was in Pakistan.
That's also correct.
He got missed by a drone strike. But over here, you know, who knows what kind of Mickeys he might get slipped, you know,
right.
over here.
Yeah. If you throw him in prison, then you have to say, why in the world did you take him from being a captive to and negotiate with the Taliban and give them back their senior operatives to take him from incarceration to throw him into incarceration? And if you don't throw them in prison, how do you justify desertion and tell the next person that deserts, oh, by the way, you're going to be thrown in prison?
Right. Yeah, so. And his hometown has a dilemma on their hands because they've had to cancel the welcome home celebration.
Right.
And, you know, and if they do send him home, the local police have to worry about having, you know, riots break out between the haters and the lovers.
Oh, just, you know, there's so many people that are in the military are indoctrinated that the military is this, you know, got this code of honor. You know, they overlook all of the rape and sexual harassments and unjustified killings, and they have this great code of honor. This guy broke their code of honor, and six people, and probably as many as 15 to 20, were killed in the process of trying to recapture him. And there are a lot of those guys that are still indoctrinated to the extent that they go and try to kill him.
If they do set him free, I could almost picture him laying low for a while and pulling a Snowden. I can see him there sitting there on his guard post, drunk, and just saying, no. Oh, this bleeps, bleep this. So he walks away from the rifle and heads up. After the treatment he's going to get coming home, he's going to have the same darned attitude in short order.
Yeah, but I would never associate Bo Bergdahl with Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden is brilliant.
No, I'm just saying.
Edward Snowden has the moral fortitude of 1,000 ordinary Americans.
No. I wasn't comparing the character or the motive, just the bleep, yeah, just the I want to get out of here attitude. That's the only parallel I was trying.
Well, and Snowden Snowden didn't want to get out of here. America stole his passport and said they were starting to hunt him down and were accusing him of doing the wrong thing when he did the right thing. And so, you know, Snowden's in an entirely different position. But
the only thing in common is I got to get out of here, you know, conclusion, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, they have now a partially empty cell down there in Mexico. Those other four guys are looking for somebody to beat up.
Yeah.
Don't know if they serve tea, but man.
Or he could do what Bill Clinton did and go to Canada.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, my guess is that the Canadians don't want him. America doesn't want him. Obama's in a real, real pickle on this, and no matter how it works out, it looks bad. If this guy comes out and says, you know, our war in Afghanistan is counterproductive, that Americans are being lied to, and that we ought not be there. And if he actually is quasi-intelligent, then...
Well, if he learned two languages...
Yes, right. He learned two languages, and he spent a lot of time knowing what the Taliban are trying to accomplish and who they are. He would be a very effective spokesperson for why our military was counterproductive in Afghanistan. The Senate and Congress and the Army can't have that. So what are they going to do?
My guess would be they give him one of these, if you believe in this cloak and dagger stuff, give him one of those fast-acting cancers or turn him into a born supremacy type Manchurian candidate thing or something like that. I don't know.
I am certain that the Obama administration did not think this through. And the fact that they didn't think it through ought to be very alarming. This is the man that has control over the world's largest military apparatus. And he was unable to think this through. It's very much like his position with China, where he is constantly accusing China of aggression and signing one military alliance treaty after another with Asian countries like the Philippines and Japan to come to their aid against China when China as a foreign entity, owns more of our T-bills than anybody else and is our largest trading partner. And we're saying that to China in the same, in the next breath, we are out condemning Russia.
After Hagel's self-righteous harangue last week, the Chinese general could barely contain himself getting before the press and saying, this is hypocrisy for the birds. You know,
Russians and the Chinese are both telling the world at the very highest level of their government. They're both telling the world that America is at the highest level of American government is nothing but hypocrisy. And they're right.
Well, unfortunately, now today, supposedly, we get to turn the tables because of Putin's supposed sexist remark about Hillary Clinton. So now, you know, all the talking heads are like, oh, he's totally unconnected from reality. I can't quite understand why Putin would commit the faux pas of making a sexist remark about Hillary Clinton, you know, about weakness being a virtue for women or something. And it's like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Don't give him any fodder, for crying out loud.
So
everybody's saying the hypocrite. He's a sexist. He's a hypocrite. Blah 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 blah.
He may be a sexist. A hypocrite. If he is a sexist, that would not make him a hypocrite.
No, he's a hypocrite for the Crimea. They're imperialists, don't you know?
I don't get how he's a hypocrite related to Crimea. He sounds like he's a Democrat relative to Crimea. They voted to be re-engaged with Russia, and he honored the people's decision, their voice. We'll be back after the commercial break. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. I don't know why Glenn does this to me, but his comments about Putin's sexist remarks about Hillary Clinton drew my attention to an article that I do want to share with you. Russian President Vladimir Putin suggested in an interview this week that Hillary Rotten Clinton is weak, adding that the former Secretary of State has never been too graceful in her statements. Now, by weak, he means that her arguments are weak, and he will explain that in a moment. And by not graceful in her arguments, his point is that her arguments aren't valid. They aren't logical. They aren't rational, is what he means. Putin was responding to a question from French journalists about Clinton's remarks in March, which likened Putin's aggression in Ukraine to the actions of Nazi dictator Adolf Hitler during World War II. And that is absolutely true. Clinton was campaigning in Long Beach, California, a fundraiser for her upcoming campaign for president. And she likened what Hitler did in the 1930s to Putin today. And I want to tell you, when she said that, she just lost all credibility. It was asinine for her to make the comparison. And so that is what Putin is now being asked to respond to. Now, his first explanation off the cuff in this interview is not very good. But his later explanation is really outstanding. He begins with the one that isn't very good. He says, it's better not to argue with women, Putin says. But Mrs. Clinton has never been too graceful in her statements. Still, we always met afterwards and had cordial conversations at various international events. I think even in this case, we could reach an agreement. When people push boundaries too far, which he's saying, and she did, by linking Putin to Hitler, when people push boundaries too far, it's not because they are strong, but it's because they are weak. Ooh, boy, that's true. But maybe weakness is not the worst quality for a woman. Now, why he began and returns to taking the argument where he has the high moral ground and making it sexist, I do not know. That was not wise. Putin's comments came in an interview with France's radio Europe 1 and TV TF1. The interview took place in Sochi, Russia, as Putin prepared for a visit to France. A Clinton spokesman did not respond. Now, going on further, In March, Clinton made the provocative comparison between Putin and Hitler at a private fundraiser in California. According to the Long Beach Press-Telegram, she compared Putin's move to provide Russian passports to people with Russian connections living elsewhere in Eastern Europe to Hitler's aggressive protection of ethnic Germans in the run-up to World War II. Now, Hitler invaded those countries with the pretext that he was protecting Germans. He invaded them and occupied them with his military, and he killed anyone that stood in his way. Putin hasn't invaded anything. I mean, the comparison is ludicrous. Then she says, now, if this sounds familiar, this is what Hitler did back in the 1930s. The next day, Clinton stood by her comments and said that she was not making a comparison. In other words, she's got caught making a stupid statement and now is going to lie and say, oh, no, I wasn't a comparison. In his interview this week, Putin was asked whether he thought Clinton went too far and whether he was angry or if her comments provoked a laugh. Quote, someday I'll indulge myself and we'll laugh together at some good joke, Putin said. But when I hear such extreme statements, to me it only means that they don't have any valid arguments. Speaking of U.S. policy, it's clear that the United States is pursuing the most aggressive and toughest policy to defend their own interest. At least this is how the American leaders see it, and they do it persistently. Ooh, powerful, articulate, to the point. Man, that is a rifle shot right between the eyes, America. Are you listening? Putin added, there are basically no Russian troops abroad, while U.S. troops are everywhere. There are U.S. military bases everywhere around the world, and they are always involved in the fates of other countries, even though there are thousands of kilometers away from the U.S. borders. So it's ironic that our U.S. partners accuse us of breaching these rules. He's telling it like it is, folks. We are purely hypocritical at the highest level of our government. And when you have to make such extreme statements as Hillary Clinton does, it's because you don't have a valid argument. Yes, he said some things that he shouldn't have said, but what he did say has merit.